Just before we get into today's episode, I want to cast your ears over here to this promo for a few minutes and explain why you might be missing out if you're not using Adobe Express. You've heard of Adobe, right? The chaps that brought you Illustrator, InDesign, and who hasn't been asked, has this been Photoshopped? Adobe is a household name. But have you heard of Adobe Express? I hadn't until the back end of last year, and then, well, I did. Now, I'm not saying that in a few years' time, people will be asking you, where were you when you discovered Adobe Express? But they may ask why you didn't start using it sooner. Using Adobe Express allows endless opportunities to scale up your creatives and improve your efficiency and productivity as well as anything I've seen or used. Creating and editing all your creative output with more customizable templates than a Rubik's Cube has variations. Well, all right, maybe not 43 quadrillion, but you get the idea. And that is just your basics. Its interoperability between Photoshop and Illustrator is a bit of a game changer for workflow management, linking all your assets together. Make changes in one place, and boom, all your assets are updated. If you don't want to miss out on any of this, use one of the links in the show notes that will take you to a free trial of Adobe Express. Or why not supersize it and trial the complete Adobe Creative Cloud package, which includes Adobe Express, as you'd imagine. Oh yeah, bonus point. If you're already a Creative Cloud user, Adobe Express is right there waiting for you. Now let's do it.
When you're looking at ROI, we've talked about the sick days, the workers' comp claims that you're mitigating. One back injury, I've seen stats where it can be as high as $150,000.
Welcome to Construction Disrupted, the ultimate podcast for the construction industry, exploring the limitless possibilities at the dynamic intersection of construction and technology. Wow, that's a mouthful. Delve into the latest topics, news, events, expert insights, and marketing that are shaping the industry right now and in the future. We'll hopefully sprinkle a little bit of humour in there for you as well. I'm your guy, Peter Sumpton, and I run a marketing consultancy focusing on those that build, create, and educate. If you're ready to embrace disruption and unlock the potential of the construction industry, keep on listening and be part of the conversation that's reshaping the future of construction. If you're not, I really wouldn't bother. It's probably not going to be that interesting for you. Whether you're a construction technology professional or just part of the construction industry in general, this podcast is your go-to resource for staying informed, inspired, and of course connected. Speaking of connected, the best way you can help to support this podcast is by sharing it far and wide and leaving us a 5-star review wherever you download your podcasts. Right then, let's go and build different and get disruptive.
In 1991, Terminator 2 Judgment Day was released, the eagerly anticipated sequel to the first film. On its release, we were all treated to the latest CGI technology, cyborgs, and other robots and shit going off. Over 30 years later, we still hear murmurings that the robots are going to kill us all and that one day AI will become smarter than us and destroy the modern world. And that's where we'll pause these yet-to-be-realized predictions and focus on the now and the possibly most advanced piece of kit we've ever featured on Construction Disrupted, exoskeleton technology. And while innovations like this may not be picking up any Academy Awards real soon, they are helping to transform the way we work and what is and might be possible in the future. But I'm not here to tell these tales. We need an expert in the field that can write the script and deliver a bestseller. Megan Kennelly, the head of global marketing at German Bionic, a European robotics company, is a B2B marketing expert with an innate passion for cutting-edge technology. Megan's visionary leadership has led to German Bionic gaining international recognition and numerous awards for its portfolio of smart power suits and wearable technologies, which includes connected exoskeletons driven by self-learning and artificial intelligence. Megan, I know that was a brief intro. Welcome to the podcast. And did I miss anything off that intro?
I think it's a good high level. But yeah, excited. Thank you again for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
Some of the benefits we may see from using exoskeletons are the likes of reduction in injuries, stresses, and strains, which I've got to point out, I've found out that over 500,000 working days are currently lost annually here in the UK from that. And there's also increased productivity as well as opening up employment opportunities. Before we get into any of that, let's take a step back and explore the details within exoskeleton technology. Can you explain what we're talking about here and the specifics behind this tech?
Absolutely. So when I think it comes to exoskeletons, it's important to sort of step back from where we are kind of in our bucket and look at exoskeletons as a whole. So when you look at the entire market, there's two segments, really. There's the rehabilitation side of exoskeletons, and then there's the preventative side of exoskeletons. So we sort of fall on the preventative side, where we're trying to prevent injuries by adding additional support and power for the workers. Within our preventative exoskeleton category, there's also different segments there too. So there's passive exoskeletons and active exoskeletons. Okay. Passive systems typically use things like strings and pulleys and the user's body mass to create energy and support. We are on the active side, where we use battery power and motor and robotics to add additional power to those lifts, in addition to the support that we also use. So it's kind of a hybrid, where you're still getting the support from, say, a passive system, but adding in those robotic elements in the power really helps to provide more support for the lifting that our typical user does.
Okay. And by exoskeleton, can you just kind of describe the obviously it's a podcast and we haven't got a visual, but could you just describe it for people that haven't seen this type of thing before?
Absolutely. So kind of imagine that you're putting on a hiking backpack, where you would adjust it and snap it around your waist. Most of that weight is going to be supported by the waist, with the strongest part of your body. And then it sort of zips up like a backpack. You do have some leg connections that act as an anchor point. So there's really three areas where it's connecting to your body: the vest, the waist strap, and the leg connectors. So once you have that on, you kind of have this backpack that has two motors on either side. The gyroscope is in the back part. So you're really in there nice and snug, nice and keeping your posture nice and ergonomic. But when you go to make those lifts, there's sensors in the back. There's a gyroscope that's basically sensing your relativity to the ground. So when you go over to bend over and pick something up, and then you trigger to come back up, those sensors are initiating the motors, and the motors are basically turning your whole waist and upper body back to that upright position. So that's really where you're getting the support, is helping to not only carry your body mass from being bent over, but also the object that you're carrying. And that's really where having the motors help to really take the weight off of your back, which would typically be holding that brunt force.
And how long do these motors or batteries last? Is it chargeable? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's actually just a Makita battery, like you would use for a power drill. So it lasts about 4 to 6 hours, depending on the weight compensation that you program the device. But it is hot swappable, so you can just take one out and put a new one in, throw the other one on a charger. It typically charges about 28 minutes for a full charge, but we like to recommend that people have extra batteries on hand so that you can keep working. Ideally, within an 8-hour shift, you would be taking a break anyways. But if not, if you wanted to power through, you can have enough battery life to do so.
Yeah, fantastic. So you mentioned that what you provide is more preventative from stresses and strains and injuries. And according to the Construction Skills Network, a CSN, a report into UK construction highlighted the need to recruit around about 225,000 new workers by 2027, say 3 years. Wow. Now, I think even just preventative technology and keeping people from getting injured isn't going to increase that drive by that many people. So can this type of technology help to resolve what for me has been an ever-present skill shortage within the likes of construction?
Yeah, so we've definitely seen the staffing topic a lot, not just amongst the construction industry, but across all industries that we work with, logistics, manufacturing, manual labor. It's a problem to be able to staff enough people. So not only are you preventing the people having sick days or having to retire early because they simply just can't take it anymore, what's nice about an exoskeleton is not only are you opening up the opportunity for people that might not traditionally be in those fields, females really not present in manual labor fields just because of the weight of some of the objects. So if you can level the playing field where now females can now be considered for those positions, that's a huge win. I think also other people, maybe older generations that still want to work. So you're just kind of opening up the talent pool, but you're also making yourself more attractive to those people that are looking for work. If I was comparing different companies and I saw that one was providing this kind of technology that's going to keep me safe, I would probably opt to look at that company more so than I would one that isn't investing in that kind of technology. So from a retention and a recruiting perspective, we have seen that having this kind of technology is beneficial for the skill gap, opening opportunity, but also keeping people safe and in the job longer.
And I suppose it works from both ends of the spectrum as well. I'm so glad you said talent pool, because that was the word that was going around in my head, in that it expands that from a multiple areas at the far end of employment, age and gender and things like that, but also from a next generation kind of viewpoint. You know, absolutely. who wouldn't want to work with an exoskeleton rather than not work with one, you know?
Gen X, Gen Z, they are very tech heavy. So they're when they're starting to look for jobs, they're going to look for companies that are innovative and looking at high tech, because they're so used to having this technology that makes their life easier. So this is just another element of attraction that I think you can sort of dangle in front of some of those potential employees. Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to kind of the heart of the matter, or where I think most minds will go to when we talk about things like exoskeletons. In 2021, Amtrust Contractor Risk Report found that 30% of claims from workplace industries, from plumbers, electricians, and retail workers, were strains, causing an average of 11 or 33 days of missed work, respectively, which is a fair chunk if it's 33 days, yeah. Even 11. And in doing some further research, it seems that most organizations are focused on the rehabilitation benefits of exoskeleton. That's the thing that comes up, it feels the most when I was searching online, rather than prevention, which yours does, which is fantastic. Prevention is better than cure, right? With this in mind, how are exoskeletons helping to reduce injuries in the workplace? How does that actually work?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at it from an ergonomic standpoint and solely taking out the additional like power support, the exoskeleton is helping to keep you in the ergonomic positions. It almost helps you more to prevent bad lifts. So if you were to just bend straight over and come back up, you're actually going to feel more force because it's working harder to keep you safe. So when you traditionally bend correctly, you're not getting as much of the power because you don't need it, because you are in an ergonomic position. So not only is it helping to keep your spine safe, you in an ergonomic position, it's also going to limit you from doing those improper lifts. So a lot of times people are twisting and then bending down. So we're preventing those movements that would traditionally lead to, or are most common to lead to, injuries. So just from the pure ergonomic perspective, having a device that's going to keep you safe from that is already leading to less injuries. And then when you start piling on top of that, the active element, the actual powered support, the motors taking the weight off of the back is just another layer of protection. So that less strain on the body, less fatigue, you're able to work those hours without seeing like that drop off in the end of the afternoon. All of those elements, I think, together, but specifically those two, where ergonomic position and motors taking the weight off of the back to make it easier, is definitely leading to less injuries, less just pain in general, and leading to a happy, healthier employee.
You've hit on two really critical points, and I'm talking anecdotally here and my own experience. The first one is that it's always those smaller moments, those smaller twists, those innocuous things that happen that seem to cause the injury or potentially cause an injury. Like you said, a slight twist or movement that you shouldn't necessarily do, but you think it's going to be quicker, and that can form an injury.
Right, you always start the day perfect form. But after you do this hour after hour, it just, like, your body, I think, is just from pure tiredness, you start to get a little lazy in your lifts. You're not always lifting 100% properly. So that's really where having a protective device to mitigate those movements or help to keep that body in a position where it might have traditionally slumped, that's really where it plays the key role. Is not at the beginning of the day. I mean, sure, it's going to help you. It's going to make it easier. But doing this job over and over, continuous heavy lifts, I mean, is really, it takes a toll on the body.
And the second part of that was the more long-term part of it, where I know from prior experience, and most of my work is desk work, in that you don't realize your posture until it's almost too late. I had years and years of being in that hunched position and thinking, this is fine, this isn't going to hurt my back. And then you get a little bit older and you realize that it does actually, and that isn't even lifting or moving an awful lot. I've come to realize that doing those things and moving and standing desks and walking and having that almost sense check of your posture is massively important. So I can imagine it makes a huge difference in the more manual workplace.
Yes. And you see, too, it's funny, like when you go on site and do a demo or you're implementing the device, it's oftentimes the older generation who is like, yep, I need that, because I've had so many years of doing this incorrectly that I see the benefit because they have the experience. Sometimes it's more of a change management task with the younger folks who are still strong, they're young, they haven't necessarily had the years of poor posture and poor lifting or those injuries that tend to not heal and stick around. So it's funny to see how the older generations are typically like, yep, sign me up, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, for sure. And for anybody that is a younger generation, whatever the older generation are telling you in terms of your posture and injuries and things like that, it's all true. It is fundamentally all true.
You always laugh when everyone's like, my body hurts. But now I'm like, I see.
Yeah, absolutely. Already. Now, our bodies do hurt. Yeah. Great. Cool stuff. Right. So when it comes to being healthier and safer at work, it's easy to focus on the workplace itself, the environment. We become accustomed to using that environment on a daily basis, where to the untrained eye, ergonomic factors that negatively impact the stresses and strains we place on our body kind of go unnoticed, like we were saying before about hunching over a desk and just that gradual process, grinding down and being a bit lazy, really. There's usually quick fixes to these, such as moving equipment to desired heights or elevating pressures on our arms and legs and backs. But one thing that I'd say we don't necessarily do is explore the data behind this. And, you know, we live in a data-driven and data-heavy world. So can we use ergonomic data to reshape our workplace?
Absolutely. And that's one thing that I think you're starting to see organizations start to look more into now, as some of the other elements of the warehouse or the smart factory are starting to get smart with data. They're starting to see what else can we learn from data. So part of what's nice about having the exoskeleton that we have is it is connected to a data platform and it's generating all of this data from the users. From that, you can go onto the dashboards and see things like how many steps are they taking throughout the day? How many lifts did they do? How much weight did they lift? How many of those lifts were good lifts versus bad lifts? And you can start to infer things about your environment. Are they walking an absurd amount during the day? Is there a way that I can move around the environment so that it's less strenuous on them, so that they can be more productive or more efficient? Or are there certain areas within the business where you have a group of workers that are having more maybe triggers of unergonomic positions and lifts that needs to be addressed? Maybe it's too tight of a quarters where they are having to do more of those turns and lifts where you can spread it out or shift things around to make it more safe. So there's plenty of data that you can make assumptions on. And I think we help guide to some of those triggers that we've seen with other customers of, hey, this might be a potential area to look at, or this is what we might suggest. So I think having just that additional data element to see not only the productivity, you're seeing the actual ROI of the device, but being able to make some of those changes to the environment where to the naked eye, like you said, might not be very aware, like, yeah, people are walking throughout the warehouse all day, but how much are they walking and why are they doing that walking, and what is their task within the workday that maybe could be made easier and safer? So I think data is just one of those things that continues to evolve. And the more we can do to deliver, like we work with our customers to see like what else would you want to learn from this data? So we're constantly able to evolve the software and some of the AI capabilities to deliver real valuable results for the organization.
I think we've come a long way from just a simple ergonomic desk evaluation.
Yes,
that's kind of how I grew up.
They measure you.
Yeah, measure you. And can you touch the floor? Yeah, tick. Can you reach a keyboard? Tick. Yeah, slightly different in terms of how we can utilize that data. That's so interesting. Okay, right. I want to move on to the cost, if you don't mind. And from some very basic research online, it appears that exoskeletons and that type of product can range in price from around about $15,000 to over $100,000. And I'm talking very basic research here.
Sure.
But that probably makes them inaccessible for a lot of smaller organizations, especially within construction and in the UK. Can you see a time where the cost is more accessible for smaller SMEs? Or will this technology always be premium? And I suppose the second part to that is, what's the ROI for one of your products or an exoskeleton?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we definitely fall on the lower range of your research. So one of our devices can range, depending on how many, so it's tiered pricing based off of volume. So I usually say it's a range between $10,000 and $15,000, depending on how many you decide to buy. What's nice is we also offer a leasing option, so it can get down to $250 to $400 a month to lease it. So that can be a little bit more attractive to some of the smaller companies. But when we look at the breakdown of employers, what's also nice about our device is you can share it amongst workers. So we have different vests and different leg attachments for different body sizes. We always typically recommend that everyone has their own vest and leg attachments, also from a hygienic perspective, but the core device can be shared amongst those workers. So if someone doesn't need it for their entire shift and they're just grabbing it like they would another tool, they can wear it for an hour, plug in their pin. So we use a pin system, so I can put my pin in, use it for the hour. I'm done. I'm going to put it back. where all the other tools are, and then someone else can go grab it, put their vest in, and use it for whatever task they need to. So different companies use it in different ways. Sometimes they have workers that are lifting for that full hour or that full 8 hours or their full shift. Or sometimes they have workers that are just doing it at the beginning of the day when all the trucks come in and they need to load it off. And then there's other tasks throughout the day where they need to have another worker wear it. So that kind of helps to break down the costs when you're looking at it from a task-based perspective versus, well, I have 20 employees and I need 20 of these devices. That can obviously add up. So I think looking at it from that perspective definitely helps. When you're looking at ROI, obviously we've talked about the sick days, the workers' comp claims that you're mitigating. One back injury, I've seen stats where it can be as high as $150,000. Wow. Crazy. So if you can mitigate one of those, that is paying for the device itself. So yeah, there's things like that where I think you're looking at not only the mitigation, but also if you're looking at the productivity standpoint. I mean, we are in this for the safety perspective, but one thing that we have seen is, like we talked about at the end of the day, where productivity takes a drop, if you will. If you can even level that productivity out throughout the day, you're already seeing a gain in what you can output because of the device. So whether it's getting more efficient in your place where things can be done faster, or you're just having the same level of productivity throughout the day, I think that's also something that is looked at from an ROI perspective. So there are various things, and various things are valuable to various companies. So I think it's all about finding out how many tasks you really need this for. Can it be shared? Is it better to buy the device or should I just rent it? So a lot of those factors can really help to not get the cost down, but also look at how is this going to affect the business.
Yeah, for sure. And if you can put it into a monetary perspective, and that isn't diminishing the human aspect of it, far from it. But if you put that into a monetary perspective, plus the safety and the reduction in industry in injury, then it's a far easier sell in terms of an ROI than it would just be, well, you're just keeping people working longer and making it a little bit easier, because I suppose that's from a simplistic point of view, that's what people see it as, you know, it's making a job easier. That's far from it.
Right.
I just want to finish up by looking towards the future, and I suppose we can't talk about any type of technology really, but this especially, without mentioning AI really. What do we have to look forward to over the next few years, and what impact do you see this all having?
Yeah, so just from an AI perspective, it's something that we already use in our device. Like I said, we use that PIN system, and the data that we're collecting, it's always learning from each individual user to be able to make the device more custom to you. I mean, everyone has a different way of bending over. Some people are taller and bend over a little bit further. So the more we can learn from that telematic data that we're collecting, the ergonomic data, the more AI can start to produce trends, and we can just learn from that and adjust on the fly to how we can support the user better. We're also using it for things like warnings. So without being annoying, I know sometimes I like to compare it to those posture correctors where it's zapping you every time you slump your shoulders. That's annoying. So we don't want to be that. But if we can start to see that the user is starting to have poor lifting habits, like I said, if it's starting to notice that they're starting to twist, or they're really starting to be unergonomic, if we can trigger some sort of alert on the device that says, like, hey, now might be a good time to take a break, go refresh, grab some water, sit down for a minute, we can help to just continue to prevent those injuries. And that's really where the AI component is helping us do those things. So it's nice to see how this data can continue to evolve. I mean, our data team is excellent, and they're always pushing new updates to the software and to the platform for organizations to learn from. So I think that's just a huge area that you're going to see continue to evolve in exoskeletons. I mean, from the basic standpoint, we always want to be cheaper. We always want to be lighter. We always want to be leaner, more comfortable for the user. But we always want to also make sure, what else can we do from a value perspective when it comes to data? Because that's really where we can make more impactful, more fast outcomes than I think you would see from the hardware side of things.
Fantastic. Megan, thank you so much for your time. It's been really interesting because it's one of those technologies that seems futuristic and it seems so far away and robotic like, but it really, you know, it really isn't. It's in the present and it's in the now, and it can really help. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Always happy to join and get the word out. That when I first started in this job, like you said, like I had no idea that these things even existed, but they're being used. They're being used in far more industries than I would have imagined. And I think, just going back to your last question, where can we see this evolving? It would be nice to see these things be able to be rented by consumers, like go to your local hardware shop, grab one if I'm moving or if I'm having to do something around the house. That's where I think you'll see the future, is these just become the norm, or they become like your traditional safety hat. Like it's just another one of those protective devices. So exciting to see where the future goes, and always happy to chat about it.
Absolutely. So hopefully we'll have you back on then in a year or so's time, when it is more commonplace and we are seeing a lot more user cases. It'd be fantastic, because I think it's something, having two small children and having to carry them on my shoulders or in a backpack, I can see huge benefits for this, both in the workplace and, like you just finished off saying there, and from a social and just general life perspective. Absolutely. Making life that little bit easier. Thank you once again so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day and giving this a listen. If you want to chat further about anything you've heard on today's episode, have a topic or technology you'd like me to cover, or simply want to say hiya, you'll find me on LinkedIn or through the emails, peter@builddifferent.marketing. Stay disruptive.